Hi there, everybody. It's lovely to be here, and it's lovely to be speaking on this passage, although it's a very difficult passage. But we're continuing in our Radical King series, and we are coming towards the end of the Gospel of Matthew. But we've got a very quite a solemn and difficult story to look at. So if I could have the passage up. So, thank you. We're going to call this, basically we're talking about Peter's denial, which was, it's not one of those happy stories you get in the Gospels. But if I could just read the scriptures, it's Matthew 26, 69, so 75. Now, Peter was sitting out in the courtyard. Now, what's happened here is Jesus has been arrested, and Jesus is in real trouble. He's basically, he's on trial for his life. And his disciples have all scattered. They've all run off in different directions. But Peter sort of hangs out, and he goes to the courtyard, almost like eavesdropping, finding out what is going on. Now, Peter was sitting out in the courtyard, and a servant girl came to him. "You also were with Jesus of Galilee," she said. But he denied it. I've lost it, but he denied it before them all. "I don't know what you're talking about," he said. Then he went out to the gateway, where another servant girl saw him and said to the people there, "This fellow was with Jesus of Nazareth." He denied it again with an oath. "I don't know the man." After a little while, those standing there went up to Peter and said, "Surely you are one of them. Your accent gives you away." Then he began to call down curses, and he swore to them, "I don't know the man." Immediately a rooster crowed. Then Peter remembered the word Jesus had spoken, "Before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times." And he went outside and wept bitterly. I want to look at this in basically break this down into three headings. If we could have that slide up, please, which is Peter's promise, Peter's denial, and Peter's reinstatement. Earlier on in the Gospels, in the Gospel of Matthew, not that far before, at the end of the Last Supper. We have these words from Peter. Could you have the next slide? When Jesus said that he was like a shepherd and he was going to be struck and all the sheep would run and scatter. And they all said, "No, we wouldn't do that." And Peter replied, "Even if all fall away on account of you, I never will. Truly I tell you," Jesus answered, "this very night before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times." Let's look at Peter in the light of this. Now, I don't know what any of you, they probably don't do it at schools now, but do you remember when they used to pick football teams, okay, and they used to get two people, and you always had to pick a team, or maybe in netball or whatever you did, hockey, hands up if you were always the one who was left last. Gosh! You know, I had one very kindly PE teacher who was so embarrassed for me. He actually used to get me to pick the sides because that's the only way Carol wouldn't come last. But I would imagine it would be very nice to be the person who was picked first. And Peter, the interesting thing about Peter was he was the disciple who was picked first. He and his brother Andrew were the two who were picked first. So all the way through the Gospels, you get the feeling that Peter's sort of feeling, yeah, I was picked first, you know, I'm the top guy. And he always was pushing himself forward, sometimes very embarrassingly, sometimes very impetuously. But this is how he felt about himself. And when it comes to the crunch, when Jesus says that all will fall away, the shepherd will be struck and you'll all just scatter and leave me, Peter says, "Even if all fall away on account of you, I never will." Now, notice it's not just a case of saying, "Oh, well, no, I won't, Lord. I won't run." He's comparing himself with the other disciples. Even if they do, I won't. I won't go along with the crowd. Even if the mood changes, even if it suddenly becomes untrendy or dangerous to follow you and everybody else runs off, I won't follow the pack. I will stay. I won't deny you. He feels more special than the other disciples. Now, one of the things that's interesting is that when the book of Matthew was being written, Peter would have been probably quite an older person, maybe my age, so not that old, but I'll stop at you, but more old. And the other thing about Peter was he would have been a superstar. The church was really growing. The church was going places. It was spreading all over the Roman world. And he was the one who knew Jesus. He was at his right side, right-hand man during his ministry. He would have been famous. And yet, the gospel writers make him out to be a total wombat. Embarrassing, impetuous, and a failure. And this is one of the wonderful things about the scriptures, about the gospels, is that they're just so honest. They're not like, you know, the manuscripts of a cult, which, you know, always blow up the leader, saying wonderful things about the leader. Oh, you know, he'd never fail. He'd never have done something like that. The gospels take the superstar of the church and portray him exactly as he was, as an impetuous failure when it came to the crunch. And that's one of the wonderful signs of the reliability, the historic reliability of the Gospels. And it's something you don't find in manuscripts like the Quran or other religious manuscripts. It's talking about something that really happened. Then we'll come to Peter's denial. If we could have the next slide. Okay. First thing I want you to notice about Peter's denial was that he was not rumbled by a centurion with a big sword. Peter, for all his faults, he was a tough guy. Has anybody been fishing out on the seas on a fishing boat? You have. It's pretty tough, isn't it? And a friend of mine did it. He said it's the hardest job he's ever done. And you have to do that as a living, you have to be a bit of a tough guy. You're not the sort of, you know, you're not a thin yogurt at all. And so he's a tough guy. And he gets rumbled, not by a centurion, not by a tougher guy. He gets rumbled by a serving girl. Now, if this was going to be dramatized on Netflix, they'd do it differently, because people would complain about the idea of a serving girl having been in a lowly position. You mustn't portray women like that. I've been watching, has anybody been watching the old Doctor Who's? Yep, oh, come on, it's not just me. Come on, hands up. You have. Thank you. Thank you, Callum. They're good, aren't they? And the old ones in the 1970s, I can't believe all the female characters are so... so pathetic, you know. And I'm watching it thinking, no, you couldn't get away with that now. You couldn't portray. But the fact is that you're not just talking about a serving girl. You're talking about a person who would have been thought of as very low esteem, a servant and a girl. And Peter was rumbled. She had the guts to go up to him and said, "Here, you're one of them, aren't you?" And he was scared of her. In fact, he was scared by two servant girls. The other thing is that he swore he didn't know Jesus. And when you actually when you read it and you imagine him saying, "By heaven and earth, I do not know the man, forsooth," like that. That's how you kind of imagine it. But it wasn't like that. It was more like, if it was on YouTube, okay, it would be, "What are you talking about? Beep, know the man. I don't beep, and I haven't even heard of him. Beep, you beep, I don't know, beep," like that. It would have been blanked out. It was really bad language he was using. Not a good witness. But finally, he wept bitterly when he realized that Jesus' words were true. And at that moment, he couldn't get out of it. He couldn't escape the words of Jesus. Jesus knew that he would do this. He wept bitterly. There was an emotional reaction to what he had done. You see, it's interesting, because last time I spoke on Matthew, I spoke on Judas. And Judas was a denier, but he actually planned his betrayal of Jesus. He actually rigged it up. He looked for ways to betray Jesus. It was all a scheme that he had. And he was remorseful. He actually committed suicide. He was so remorseful. But it's a different thing. Here we have Peter. Didn't plan to deny Jesus. It just happened at the spur of the moment when it comes down to it. I wonder if that's ever happened to you, that you may have been to church and you think, I must witness more. But then when it comes to it, when you're surrounded by people, or maybe you're the only Christian at work or something like that, you kind of like button up. You kind of just like, you don't say things, and you go away maybe thinking to yourself, I could have said something then about my faith. But when it came down to it, I just chickened out. It's a bit like that, but obviously even more serious with Peter. One of the things that's interesting is, earlier on in the gospel stories, in the Garden of Gethsemane, when Judas leads the band to arrest Jesus, Peter has a sword and he chops someone's ear off. Thank you, it does, doesn't it? And Jesus healed the man's ear and said, put that sword away. They who live by the sword die by the sword. Now, what you've got here is something very interesting, because you've got aggression and submission. Peter acts in an aggressive way at first, the first time. And then the second time, he acts in a submissive way. And I don't know if you've ever been to assertiveness counselling or anything like that, but it was a big thing in the 90s, certainly. And I went to a talk once where they were saying that there are two ways in which we get confrontation wrong. We can be aggressive and go, fire back, like at work, someone complains about something, you go, wah, 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 like that. Or there could be submission. They could be, oh, I'm sorry. And Peter does both of those. He isn't assertive. There's a lack of assertiveness. And that says something about Peter being, as well as all the other things we can say about him, there's a kind of a bit of damage when it comes to his self-esteem. That he doesn't behave assertively. He behaves either aggressively or he behaves submissively and chickens out. But isn't it wonderful? The first person Jesus chose was a slightly damaged person. Because there's hope for us a lot, isn't there? But Jesus, of course, is arrested. He's mocked. He's led out to be crucified. The most humiliating death, the death of a failure. The whole point of when Romans crucified people, and they didn't crucify them with a little pair of boxer shorts like in the Renaissance paintings. Sorry, I haven't got one of those to show you this time. I was in a rush. But they used to crucify people naked. The whole point of crucifixion was it was humiliating you to show that you have no power at all. And so if Jesus had any charisma, if he had any kind of, power over people, like a sort of a, celebrity, it was all destroyed on the cross. He was humiliated on the cross. And yet, after the crucifixion, the church grew and people were preaching about Jesus more than ever. What happened? Well, Jesus rose from the dead as a fact of history. It's so exciting, I want to get excited. It's exciting because what it means is that something greater than death, something greater than humiliation is now here, the risen Christ. Life can't be the same. It has to be exciting. How can the Christian life not be exciting when the greatest threat, death and humiliation, it's all been conquered? Jesus has put it under his feet, stamped it on his feet. I get so excited about that. The greatest tragedy became the greatest act of God in history, the center point of history. And when Jesus died upon that cross, every single sin, every single failure of yours, every single weakness, all the things that you're ashamed of, he took it upon himself and done away with it. And any of you who wants to come, who want to know about this, any of you who are struggling with guilt, struggling with shame, struggling with embarrassment, Christ has taken the punishment. It doesn't have to be with you forever. You don't have to carry it around forever. And that was the same for Peter's failure. And that was the same for Peter's denial. Finally, Jesus is reinstated. When they had finished, sorry, let me just explain. This is taken up in John's Gospel. And this is after Jesus has risen from the dead, and he meets them on the banks of the Sea of Galilee. He meets them fishing, where he basically met them first. And they have a meal together. Man who was once dead is now eating fish. When they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" "Yes, Lord," he said, "you know that I love you." Jesus said, "Feed my lambs." Again, Jesus said, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" He answered, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said, "Take care of my sheep." The third time he said to him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, "Do you love me?" He said, "Lord, you know all things, and you know that I love you." And Jesus said, "Feed my sheep." Now, first of all, when Jesus confronts Peter, who had denied him at his time of greatest weakness, Jesus does not say, go up to him and say, "Peter, for crying out loud, man up, will you? Sort yourself out." He doesn't say that. He doesn't say, "Peter, yeah, you did quite well, but I think what we're going to do is put you on a theology course. And I've also asked if you could have some assertiveness counselling." He doesn't say any of that. He asks him three times, "Do you love me?" Now, Peter disowned Jesus three times. And we have an echo here of those three times denial, three times, "Do you love me?" And do you notice that when Jesus says this, he doesn't just say, "Do you love me?" He says, "Do you love me more than all of these?" Meaning the other disciples. Now, what did Peter say when he was told he was going to deny him? He said, "No! Even if they do, I won't." And in this statement, Jesus brings up the same context. Do you love me more than these? It's not a case of, are you the first who was picked? It's not a case of, are you a privileged person? It's not a case of, do you have skills? It's a case of, do you love me? And Peter, before his denial, was thinking in terms of himself as, no, I'm the man. I'm the one who won't deny you. It's me, me, me. And what Jesus says is, no, it's not about you. And it's not about your relationship with these people, you thinking you're better than them. It's, do you love me more than them? Jesus, I don't believe, is necessarily looking for us to be highly qualified, access to, you know, privileged people, clever. If we are, then that can be used for the kingdom of God. They're good. There's nothing wrong with those things. What he wants to know is, do we love him? Because that's where your energy will come from. If you don't want to be that denying, second-rate Christian person who you're ashamed of being, then it's not a case of, like, you know, pushing yourself. It comes naturally. Do you love Jesus enough to talk about him in front of other people? I'm standing here feeling like the biggest hypocrite in the world because this is something I'm not very good at. And I have to sometimes just to get in the right mind when I'm in a situation where I think something could come up, I have to pray. And I have to pray, is this the right thing? And Lord, give me the right words. And, you know, sometimes it happens, my wife and I were in a visiting a lovely garden, and there was a man, quite an elderly man with his daughter, and he just, very friendly man, and he just saying, look, in nature, you know that there's something out there, don't you? You know when you see that there's a plan, there's a big master plan. And so I'm praying, yes, it's God, I don't know how to get this through to you, I've only just met you and things like that. And you just pray for the right words to say. Sometimes I say things like, well, I preach in a church, actually, and I think, you know, I get all my words mixed up, but, you know, I've come to the conclusion that I would rather say something in front of people and get it wrong than not say it at all and clam up. You know, I just think to myself, yeah, let's just try. Because I became a Christian because somebody just suddenly out of nowhere just blurted out that they were a Christian. And I became interested and I followed it up. You know, I didn't become a Christian there and then, but it was you know, days later, weeks later. Do we love Jesus enough just to share him, just to talk about him, not to deny him? We may be fearful, but it's very interesting because John, who wrote that gospel I've just mentioned about, in 1 John 4:18, he said the famous line, perfect love drives out fear. What is perfect love? Surely perfect love is love for God. But as we have this love for God, it will drive out fear. That's where we should be working at. That's where our prayers should be. That's where our quiet time should be. That's where our fellowship should be. Developing love. And this love, I always think of God's love as being like a waterfall, right? You stand underneath it. It's like a really big shower. And you go like that. And it's overwhelming you. But the water does go somewhere. And when the love of God falls on you, it's like you've got to give it to other people. And some of you may be thinking it's strange, the idea of Jesus saying, do you love me more than all these? They said, well, that's a bit self-centered, isn't it? Well, it would be if he wasn't God. But being the risen Lord has conquered death. I think he's special. I think he's worth our love more than everybody else. But I found the only way you can really love people is to love Jesus. And to allow that love to... Because otherwise you're loving people for the wrong reasons. It's very easy to love somebody because you want to look like a lovey person. Because you want to be... You want people to like you. The love of God isn't about that. The love of God is loving them the way God loves them. In a sacrificial way. And so, isn't it wonderful how this story of denial turns into this, to be able to talk about the love of God, be able to talk about forgiveness. This is our God who can turn disaster into beauty. So anyway, I'm going to leave it there, and God bless you all. Thank you.